Today is April 15th, 2007. This is the interview of Dr. John Matthew Murphy of Tega K, South Carolina. Dr. Murphy is being interviewed by Mark Carr. Dr. Murphy, thank you for your time.
Sure.
I'd actually like to start out with kind of a simple question. Basically, what is your strongest memory of Brooklyn?
Well, I have some fantastic memories, but my strongest memory was how neighboring people fostered the growth and the community that developed, or had developed before I got there, of youngsters in the Brooklyn area. And that was in the area where I was raised, certainly. But we had a heterogeneity of professionals and people of work, you know, just on my single block. We had a minister by the name of Reverend Mayfield. They have about three churches named after him right now in town. We had a brick mason, you know, across the street. My grandfather was a brick mason. Bobby Childs, who is now president of the Greensboro National Bank, stayed right across the street from where I was raised. And so was he. We were raised in that same area, same block. It was the only concrete street in the residential portion of Brooklyn. That's not the business portion, but the residential portion, other than Boundary. Boundary was also. So we did a lot of skating, things like this, and activity on that street.
What street was that?
Long Street.
Long Street?
South Long Street. The 600 block of South Long Street.
Okay. You talked about, you know, neighbors fostering the young. Did that carry over into the schools, or was that in addition to the actual schools?
Yes, the parenting and teachers and schools were much closer in communication and in the activities of the students, okay? And they could relate. No problem for a parent to pick up the phone, call the teacher, and the teacher would call the parent and tell them, you know, we'll need your help in dealing with this kind of problem that might be occurring with your child. Whatever. And they got it, you know, 100%, not more. The neighbors, same thing. We played touch football because it was concrete. We did touch. We played touch football, and one of the fellows got out of hand or something. It was a little rougher than one. We had a neighbor that was, and she loved to watch us play out there, you know. And so she'd call out that young fellow and say, well, look, you're going to have to settle down something, you know, be a little, or I'll tell your mother. He all but quit the game. No, but it was real nice, and it was very well received with respect. No disrespect, no respect for age and for anyone that's walking through the street, through the community. So.
Hmm. Okay.
And so, you know, it was a nice community.
Now, that communication between the parents and the schools, was that through a formal organization like the PTA, or was that more of an informal?
Yes, well, they had PTAs. But all times are, for example, my mother and father were school teachers. So they knew some of the teachers. And other parents that were not school teachers knew some of the teachers because they belonged to the same church, or, you know, the social milieu was a fantastic mix. And I say that because just people care. I don't know if that exists now. You know, people that just couldn't care. They don't know the neighbors now. Here on Long Street, we knew who stayed where and whose child was where, you know, whatever. Okay. And that prevailed throughout a lot of communities because I carried papers throughout the Brooklyn community when I was young. And I could experience that myself, dealing with parenting, parents, you know, some of the older people. Well, you're the Mercy boy. I know. Yeah, I know your father and your mother, you know. So people care. They really care. And so I remember that very distinctly, and how that helped me, affect me, and how I dealt with people. Even to now, I still deal with people. And I deal with it from that perspective. I like to help. I'm doing it because I care.
With these teachers, were they able to really help prepare you for college? Were they given the materials that they needed to help you? Or?
Well, I'm not sure if they were given, and yet I am sure. I know we used books. So there were other books out there probably were much more up-to-date and much more informative that they were using, because that's what we were using. Yeah. But what we got from the teaching, the cadre of teachers, as I moved through the school system, was homework. You do the homework. You do the reading and try to get all the perceptions and all the information that you can from the books that you have. And then when we gather in the classroom, then we would have a little better participation than what I understand exists now. I don't know that, because I'm not in the school system. But we had expectations. Teachers had expectations from the students. And then we participated. And so we may not have known all the information that we needed because we used books. But what we had that we used, I feel comfortable that they were used very, very well, at least in most instances.
Do any of these teachers, aside from your parents, you mentioned they were teachers as well. Do any of these teachers really kind of stand out in your mind?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm from Brooklyn, so there's some teachers that taught a lot of people that came through Myers Street Elementary School, through Second Ward High School. Some of them I'm looking at, and I was looking through the book here. And I have a yearbook. But I know my mother was very well received in elementary school. That's my street now. There were two or three feeder schools to Second Ward, maybe four. I think there was one in Third Ward. It was my street, and it was the First Ward school, and then one from Third Ward, I believe. For schools that fed students in the Second Ward. And there's certain teachers that you would have in the school that you attended that you either want or you might not want. It depends on your purview and what you expect to get out of school. But yeah, there's some teachers that are very, very, very good teachers. I remember when I came to elementary school, was very helpful to me. Miss Greer was one. And, Miss Garner, and I'm sorry, Garner Warner. Miss Warner was another good teacher that was very strict, but you learned a lot. And I wasn't in my mother's class by choice, not my choice, but I thought it was probably better, because anyway, but we had some teachers, I can remember all of them, but I'm looking at the faces, and in Second Ward we had some teachers there that were very outstanding, Miss Hall, Miss Maddie Hall, Miss McCorkle, Mr. Levi. Our coach was very instrumental. The coach we had was, we had Ed Sycamore, kind of thing. But then we had Mr. Frazier, who did a lot. I call it the transformation with auto mechanics course. I took that course and I learned a lot. And there's a lot who took that course at the end in the automobile industry right now. He's done very well since high school. Then, of course, band, Mr. Page, who's our band instructor, formerly in the band there, and took that band to the state competition and won first place while I was there. Now, and that's just in one person's tenure.
Right.
And developed that band, and so it was a top marching playing band, concert band in the state. He's for blacks, but this is not included. But I became the number one trumpet player in the state at that time because of his insistence on the performance. You know, made a difference. I enjoyed that, and it was a very, it did a lot of good things for the school because of the publicity it received and the quality of play. We run band concerts in different places. Very interesting. And we had Mr. Diamond, his Vermeil father, who was very, very good. I mentioned Mr. Levi and Mr. Wiley. These are the teachers that we had as boys that would keep us going in the right direction, either in athletics or in school.
Sounds like something you definitely need in a school there to kind of keep you going.
Oh yeah, you had role models, you know. It's very important.
Did you have very many role models outside of the school, or?
Yes, we had some in the community, in the church. We had role models in the church. And, those in the community leaders. That Mr. Greer, A.S. Greer, he's founder, he and his brother, of Greer Funeral Home. Excellent community role model. And his brother belonged to our church, the Rock Angel Zion Church. He was also very good, you know, in terms of community. And they have a grid town you may be familiar with.
Okay.
Named after he and his brother's family. And there are some other role models that Jeannie Jean and my father are very good friends, and I learned a lot. Gene Parts, he had his own radio show at the time.
Really?
Probably the first one he had.
Do you remember what station?
It's a WGIB. Is that right? I think it's WGIB. I may be mistaken.
What kind of show was it? Do you remember?
Well, it was a very appealing show because his music is more music related and to the times, you know, the youngsters and everything. And also, he had a variation of. Very good. He was very well regarded and liked in the community. And as a matter of fact, he and my father formed a partnership. They had an insurance agency. They owned Second Street. You know, you've probably heard of Second Street being a black business district.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Okay. Now, were there some of the other interviews we've done for the project, we've heard that some of the insurance and financial companies didn't really come to Brooklyn. Was there very many kind of homegrown businesses
there? Well, that was an effort that my father and Mr. Potts would make, have a homegrown insurance agency.
Okay.
It wasn't successful, though.
Because
they just didn't get the kind of business that we thought they might at the time. So. They closed the business down.
Okay.
And of course, my father stayed in business, and of course, Gene is in business in communication. Very heavy. And my father was a coach, coached at Plato Price and at Clear Creek High School. Coached football and basketball at those schools. Those were county schools.
Okay.
And he decided to leave teaching. He taught mathematics, that was his subject, mathematics. So he decided to leave teaching, which is quite a move, because that was a secure job, you know. And decided to go into photography.
Really?
It's very interesting, yeah. And he went. went in with, at that time, it was Delmas Studio. And they just opened up shop right over there on 7th Street, 7th and 7th Street, Central, is it Central? Yeah, 7th and Central Avenue, that's right. That's,
okay.
That's before they built the Piedmont, not Piedmont, but that college, the junior college there.
Okay, okay.
It was on the corner there, I can remember that. So what he was doing was getting the photographs, taking photographs of the black schools because they were segregated. And they realized that there's a good business out there if you get a good person, so that's what they did. They hired my father and taught him about photography and everything. And he traveled throughout. He had the territory of actually 7 states, but there's too much driving. So he cut it down to about 3 or 4 states, I think. And he earned his livelihood there for quite a while. I did that well. And what do you do? I would help drive during the summer months when I'm not in school. And he would go to the different schools and get the contracts, sell his whole services and for the contracts for the yearbooks, class pictures and this sort of thing. And then he would go back during the school year, doing a lot of party of whenever they could schedule to take the pictures. So.
Now, were these only the African-American schools that he was able to work
that's
with?
That's right. That's how it started.
Okay.
Because they were not able to get in there because they had African-American principals and a lot of students. Now, some of them did have Delmar Studio, but Delmar was also competing with, was it Rain Company, Gustin, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it has Rain. It did yearbooks of Rain.
Okay.
That's some of the things I can remember. And of course, I looked up to my father because he was quite a person. Tremendous.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. It took an all nerve to do it, make it work. And make it succeed successfully.
Now, you graduated from high school in what year?
53.
What did you do after you graduated?
I went to Howard University. I was at Howard University in Washington, D.C.
Okay. What did you study at Howard?
I studied sciences. I was in a pre-med type curriculum.
Okay.
And yet, I also took education. I transferred from Howard. Now, my sister's finished from Howard, but I transferred from Howard to Morgan State, which is on Baltimore.
Okay.
And when I went there, I enrolled in education courses along with the science courses so I could prepare myself to teach. But my first goal was to go into either medicine or dentistry or one of the healthcare fields.
Okay, okay. And so, when did you return back to Brooklyn?
Wow, when I came back to Charlotte, Brooklyn was not there. It was no longer existing.
What year was that?
I finished school, and remember I was saying I was away 20 years.
Correct.
I came back and set up my practice in 73. But I was fortunate enough when I heard about this, they were building a building. The Walton Building is there now.
Mm-hmm.
It was built by black investors originally. It's called East Independence Plaza. And that location would have been Brooklyn.
Okay.
It's right across the street from my street school.
Okay.
Where they, the aquatic center. So I had the opportunity to invest. I was one of the first investors in that building. And I jumped right on to it. I did want to come back to Charlotte practice, and I also felt like where I practiced, I should own property. But in this case, I didn't own all of it. I was a limited partnership, but I did have on part ownership.
Right.
So.
So where were you living when you first heard that that Brooklyn was going to be urban renewed?
Well, I heard about it before I left to go to college, but it had not actually started. See, I left in 53.
Uh-huh.
And I think you'll see on your sheet here, it says starting 50. We introduced you to attend a school or recreate a neighborhood from 50 to 77.
Okay. So they had started it.
So they would start, they were talking about it then, okay, essentially. Mm-hmm. They weren't really heavy into it. But in 1960, I was away from here.
Okay.
And in all that 20 years, I would return on Christmas or special occasions or something like this. Otherwise, I was doing well. I was homeschooling.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned that your parents had already started moving to Biddleville by the time the...
Okay, well, they moved in Biddleville to Biddleville in 1954. And I was already enrolled in college then.
Okay, okay. Did you have any family that was still living in Brooklyn and were displaced, or...?
Yes, my grandparents were displaced. My parents were able to move because of their choice where they wanted, because they were building a house and that sort of thing.
Right.
But my grandparents were displaced. And at the time, my grandfather was not retired, but nearing retiring age. And where we had been accustomed to them being only one block away from us.
Uh-huh.
Then they moved. They moved out in a section off of West Trade Street, which was out behind the bank, McKenzie Farms Bank,
okay,
down the street down there. Where we built, where Dad built, was out Batesville Road, right down the street in front of the old West Charlotte School.
Okay.
Now it's the middle school now, I don't know what they call it now. It's the new West Charlotte is further down.
Okay.
This is a school that was used to, it was West Charlotte then, yeah, high school.
Okay. Okay.
So that was quite a distance. And this is one of the things I think that has bothered me about how this whole project moved, how it progressed, and what were the reasons, as you mentioned earlier, why it was necessary. Because we had some beautiful homes in Brooklyn. It wasn't an eyesore, believe me. Okay, serious. Beautiful homes. And, there were some areas that may have been more congested, or may have had, you know, a need to redevelop or something. But the whole Brooklyn just went through and just, like everybody's got to go. I think there's a lot to dismantle the type of community spirit and community participation, and actually respect that just emanated throughout communities there. And there were some areas that were problem areas too. You would find those in any probably group of human beings. But the people that had pride in their streets and their community and people, it showed. You could drive through that and you know that, you know, people here care. And so why, I don't know, why everything from Pearl Street to the square was wiped out. Not Mohair Street.
Right.
Trade.
You had mentioned that it had, you know, the effect of, you know, destroying the community spirit, the bonds. Do you think that was a byproduct, or do you think perhaps that was intentional?
Well, I don't know if it was intentional, because they help people shop for housing. And the way that was done was based on economics, wherein Brooklyn grew and emanated from a base that was a variation in economics of the owners and people that lived in there. It's definitely a different scale. You had people that were teachers living there. next door to people that were you know, construction workers, or just weren't making as much money as they were making, but it didn't matter. I mean, it just mattered. If one got sick, it didn't matter. The other next door would help come and take care of it, make sure that they could do all they could do. Yeah. Okay. And it was, I mean, you could write a book by it. I mean, it was happening, it was real. Yeah. So, I mention that because I know how much my mother cared about the people in that community, in the block. And it was just about like a two block span. It wasn't a real like a full block square, you know.
Right.
But even our grandparents were just on a block or move within a full block span too.
Right.
We knew all the people. So to find a place after having lived in that environment that had all of those characteristics, I'm sure had to be a real monumental task. Because if you leave off of Long Street at that time, where you're living, and you find a house where you could afford a $300,000 house or whatever, anywhere else in this Mecklenburg County area,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to have some of the quality of living and community that you left on Long Street. Of course, there are people now that move, they don't even know the neighbors. Okay, so where you go from there? See? And then the youngsters, you better not go over there to somebody's house and tell them, you know, you're all too loud or you need to cut down. Even if the parents are there. It's
right.
not the same.
Right.
But there's no one in Long Street in that area. They wouldn't mind at all. But, you know, when it's quiet, I'm going to tell your mother, I'm going to tell your dad, or whatever.
So do you think that was probably the worst effect of urban renewal, was the destruction of this tight-knit community, or?
Not any question about it, in my mind. In my mind, because the people that left the community had those kind of qualities. I know they had to miss it when they moved to another community, unless they got out and generated that type of relationship. And I know my grandfather didn't move to a relationship in his, you know, new home he had, you know, smaller than the one he was accustomed to. He had like a 12-room house. I mean, about 5 bedrooms, you know. And he moved to a 3-bedroom. As a matter of fact, one 3-bed. It was, yeah, 3-bedroom. And he may have known some of the people that might have been his age or something, but there were very few in that area.
What do you think the effects on the people who were transplanted, who were moved, what do you think some of the psychological effects on some of these people were?
Well, I think the whole movement had its psychological traumas. It's not just one trauma. And little characteristics and things that help make a community whole, you know, help a caring community become whole. To take care of your neighbors as you would like them to take care of you. And just that alone means that you've missed something. If you never knew it in the other community, your parents knew it. And you don't see that kind of situation now. And I don't know if that took, you know, was that pervading, but I just know that there had to be a shortcoming. Had to be. Because when it wiped out, I couldn't go back to see people, you know, that I knew used to stay there, you know. And the ones that I did visit, they were staying in a total different kind of environment.
When you would come home to visit, what was your first impression when, you know, when Brooklyn was gone, or when it started to be gone?
Well, it was really, sorry. I was sorry about it. You know, I missed a lot of things. I missed people primarily. Just think about places where I used to go to play as a kid. Now, Pearl Street Playground was one place, but they maintained that there. But it became smaller and was just, it didn't have a football field type effect like we could have. Like
okay.
Second Ward used to practice down there, football, at Pearl Street.
Really?
So the purpose of the playground changed because it no longer had Brooklyn side participating, but they would probably still have some coming from Cherry across. But that was a distinct boundary until they opened up all those streets through there. Sugar Creek used to go through there, and that was a distinct boundary between Pearl Street on this side of the creek, Cherry on the other side. But it had a great big conduit that you could walk across from Cherry.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Across the creek, and because that's where some of the students used to come, to the second one, the last one, to come across that. And then they open up paths and bridges.
Now, the conduit across there, was it like a footpath, or was it a footbridge across the creek, or?
Now, I remember when it was none but a huge pipe. I remember that.
Really?
Yeah. Now, they did provide, you know, walk across space.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that fight. And it's big enough where it was almost like walking across a walkway because it was so large.
Like the old, like the large culvert?
Yes.
It was pipes.
Yeah. Big pipe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
And they didn't have a road going across there. You know, eventually it built a road going across in that same area, over to Cherry.
Okay. Now, how you're talking about, you know, how close knit Brooklyn was. What were some of the relations of Brooklyn to, let's say, like Cherry or some of the other communities surrounding it?
Yeah, well, we had friends that would go to school
mm-hmm.
with us that were from Cherry, and we might meet at down at the football field or down at Pearl Street. We had a little. Water spray, run the pool. It was just for you to get a shower. I said, you know, I forget what they call wading pool.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids would, you know, be down there. And I know a friend of mine, there's several of them, who went to church together. And that would be an area where you'd have common friends, you know, church surrounding the neighborhood. Because I had friends from First Ward, friends from Cherry, as well as friends there in Brooklyn.
Now, after urban renewal, after the churches were destroyed, do these same church communities, did they still gather together in certain locations, or did they just sort of go their own way?
Well, they had a way of finding their own way, and you know, like a church would find a way to build, but they would meet in a certain place at a certain location since they had to leave here. And then the city would help them in some way, I'm sure, probably find a location. But they had to build their own church again. I mean, the city didn't come in, you know.
Right.
I just think of Brooklyn Presbyterian Church. It was right down on McDowell Street. And my father at that time had joined 7th Street Presbyterian Church, which is still existing. And when they had to move, what they did, they worked out a merger with 7th Street, and they became a member there at the 7th Street. And so they call it First United Presbyterian Church now.
Okay.
Changed the name. But they didn't go out and build a new church. And I don't think the city invited them. If they did, you weren't going to participate fully in it. I just don't know all the
right
facts about that.
Okay.
But there was another church, there was a congregation church, which is right up there on the corner of Caldwell. It's on Caldwell and Boundary. sorry, Caldwell and Stonewall Congregation Church. They had to move. Stonewall AME Zion Church, which is right across the street from my grandmother, down on Crockett. Stonewall, they had to move. I can't go. There's a lot of scary churches.
Yeah.
They had to move. The Reverend Mayfield, I'm saying, about, they had to move his church. Well, he moved too. And then they came back and built First Baptist Church.
Was there a lot of resentment there towards First Baptist?
I don't have any resentment. What I resent is how they just dislodged, just completely took the property for whatever reasons they thought of then from churches. And then come right back and build a church. I mean, just that alone.
Yeah.
Well, what's there that's so special about your church? We're supposed to be worshiping the same God, you know.
Right.
So, why? Now you say you're going to displace me. So, and you displaced my school. You shut down the schools. The church is just... And then you came back and you built businesses where we had businesses. You built churches where we had churches. So I don't let that make a scar on me, but I don't miss something. Yeah, that don't make kind of sense that, you know, you're supposed to help your brother me.
Do you have any idea why they would have done that? Or?
I have no idea, except at that time, Jim Crow was still going on. And I don't even know if they even cared if they needed an idea. Anyway, I won't belabor it, but that's just something I just never, you know. It's been, I just don't think, you know, very good of that having happened.
Right. Overall, I mean, you've talked about what a really tight-knit community Brooklyn was, and when you came back, it was just you didn't quite have the same place to congregate again.
All right, well, now when you're saying tight-knit Brooklyn, Brooklyn was a large landmass.
Okay.
You know, when I say large, it's more than a couple blocks. Okay. I'm talking about the block where I was raised.
Okay, okay.
And where my grandparents were raised.
Okay.
The people on those two streets, Long Street and Crockett Street, they were only one block apart from each other, knew my family. Okay, my grandparents, and they knew my parents, and they knew me, because I'm, you know, that's a little Murphy boy, that, you know, you see. And it meant something to us, and to other kids raised there. My parents remember their parents, and they said, hey, this is the little child's boy, you know, Father Childs. So, you know, that was important.
No, actually, did you have any siblings growing up?
Yes, I had two sisters.
Two sisters?
I think one of them was supposed to be interviewed also. Johnny May Bullock. She stays out in Hyde Park.
I'm not sure what that name.
Okay. Well, I have another sister named Millie Ann McFadden. She's also here in Charlotte.
Okay.
I don't know if Vermeil contacted them or saw to it that they were contacted or not.
I'm not sure. Now, how did Urban Real, how did it affect them? Had they already graduated from high school, or had, where were they at in their lives?
Yes, well, my sister and I have one sister, it's a twin.
Okay.
Okay, so we were same ages.
Okay.
My older sister, she was about 4 years in schooling, not mm-hmm. necessarily 4 years age difference, but in school, there was a 4 year difference. So she had, in 53, she had finished college, undergraduate level.
Mm-hmm.
And she had returned back to North Carolina area, if I'm not mistaken, because I know she was in Greensboro to teach. went on to do both of them were in graduate work, to finish graduate work.
I'm sorry, which one was the teacher? Was it Millie or?
Both were teachers.
Okay.
Millie was the one that finished earlier.
Okay.
Okay. And she came back earlier. Johnny, when she finished, she came to, actually, Virginia, my father's hometown, Marshville, Virginia. And that's where she taught when she finished.
Okay.
That was 4 years later. And then eventually she came back to Charlotte and taught at John C. Smith and also taught in the city school system, Olympic High School, before she retired.
Okay. Okay. Kind of wind this down a little bit. But basically, just what are kind of your reflections as to the effect on Charlotte as a whole of urban renewal?
Well, it would be very difficult for me to relate anything other than I just shared with you, and that has to do with the actual action that was taken. And if there's any observation now, because this 20 years later, I was not able to follow what developed.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, if there's any observation that may be related to that type of fragmentation, that may be the crime scene. You know. And I say that because back in those days, your neighbors, they could see what you're doing, and if they didn't say anything to you, they'd tell your parents. And that was a very effective preventive. Seriously, back in those days. Because we had crime then too, but
right.
I'm just saying, you know, you had those things existing there, where now, I don't know, neighbors even would take the risk of saying anything to a parent about the child. I mean, the children are here shooting people. I'm talking about children. I'm not talking about even an older teenager. You know, a 12-year-old shooting their brother. Shooting. No, that's okay. I won't get into that now. But there's some things that are happening here now. And it probably may have happened had it not changed Brooklyn. I don't know that. But I know when you can move from the area where you've known your neighbors for years, and you've relied on them to be there, or they relied on you to be there when they needed you or whatever, you know. Like the old America that I thought about. That's where I've got it from.
Right.
It's not like that now. It might be in some areas. But other people would go out in communities that, you know, buy $1 million homes. Don't even matter.
Okay.
So something's, you know, something is there. And yet, America's a fantastic place to grow up. You know, even though you have some things that are not equitable. You know, yeah. And so I'm not saying that they're fracturing a portion of the city life of individuals. May have had any kind of negative impact, but I would be hard pressed to not feel that that might have had some effect on some people, and most of them.
Okay. Well, can you think of anything you'd like to add, or anything you'd like to share that I haven't brought up yet?
No, well, I enjoyed returning to Charlotte. Charlotte's been very good to me. A dentist that practiced here for 25 years. And that people have been very good, very supportive for me, and I appreciate that. You know? And I want to say that every chance I can get, you know. And I appreciate that support. And that's the one thing I think most important. And that the people receive me back into community. Very warm. And I've tried to do what little I could for the community since I've been back. I've had some contributions I made to the community. And I'm not going to blow my horn, but I just feel that I did some things that I think made a difference. I'm still making a difference in the community.
Can you give any examples of those? I know you don't want to blow your own horn here, but can you? You've got me interested.
Well, I thought it was significant that I was able to, and I was appointed to do this by the former first senator, black senator, North Carolina, Senator Alexander, Fred Alexander, as the mayor, Bill. That's I found out that I was appointed to serve on the Martin Luther King Commission. And we were responsible for submitting to the city the approval of the statue, Martin Luther King statue. So I was proud to be a part of that. And I'm just happy to hear that they also named the street, not Third Street, but Second Street, where we had all the black businesses,
mm-hmm.
Martin Luther King Boulevard. Those are the areas. Those are the areas where you had black activity that was very significant, especially 7th Street, because that's where he had the businesses.
Right.
My father's office was there on 7th Street, the insurance business. I feel good about. The C.W. Williams Health Center, the initiation of that project started in my office.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Between me and the data manager for the health systems agency. And it's been serving this community for 25 years, and I'm happy to have been a part of that. And we asked Dr. Williams to head up the medical component because they not included dentistry. Because dentistry was supposed to originally be a part of that. But politically, the dentists said they had too many dentists. But they got the medical center, and it's been very helpful. And I'm supposed to meet with someone tomorrow over there. I got back on the board. I was a long time ago because of all the commitment. But I'm very happy to be a part of that, to have been a part of that, and still am now as a board member. And there's some other things. We built our new church, Little Rock Indian Zion Church. I was on the trustee board at the time that took place, and that was the excitement. And then they're going to tear down our old church because they wanted to enlarge 7th Street.
Okay.
And it was right, just a sidewalk away from 7th Street then. Okay. But what happened was we were able, we very convinced it must have been to somebody up there. But if you notice, 7th Street curved around the church.
I have noticed. I have noticed
now,
that actually. I used to work.
It wasn't just me about that. It was our trustee board, because we had a very, very outstanding trustee board at that time. Made a difference. And still a little rock. But that church was built on rock.
Really?
Oh yeah. And my granddad laid the brick. He was a brick mason.
Mm-hmm.
He laid the brick on a little rock. It's a, what is that? Cultural Center, Afro-American Cultural
mm-hmm.
Center. And I understand they're going to, they plan to move to a new building they're building for that and changing it to Gantt.
Mm-hmm.
Something Gantt. Yeah.
Okay.
Which I'm sure would be nice. And I know they could use the space.
Right.
Yeah. But this was an exciting day. Those were back in it, and I came back here in 73. And between 73 and 85, there's a lot going on here that I was part of. I was active at that time. And I was just enjoying it. And seeing things work, trying to see if this, because they're helping people, that's why. And the project with Dr. Martin Luther King, I thought that was very significant because we actually decided on the statue as opposed to the name of the street or something like that at that time. So like a monument.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I heard about. But that was very, very meaningful. Participatory type activity, and we
right.
actually worked. We went out and raised money, and we were raising pennies, nickels, whatever, to help pay for statue. And then finally the business community kicked in.
Right.
And it made it happen. But, it's quite a project.
Do you think that growing up in Brooklyn and with that community spirit, that helping out each other, do you think that has really shaped your community activism or your community works?
Oh, yeah. No question. No question about it. Yeah. I mean, I was growing up in a community where the elders were dealing with projects in the church that would help people. You know? And,
right.
My mother was active in working with their at the organization at Little Rock Church, the steward board, the stewardess board, they would have projects that they would take on that they felt would help the membership in the church. You know, my grandmother, she played the organ. She taught people how to play the organ and the piano. So when she was not able to do it, they took over and played. And my grandfather was on a steward board. He used to brick mason.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those organizations in Little Rock Church at that time were very active and participating in the community.
Right.
Not just in the church, but also active in the community.
Okay.
And it was located over there in an area that was had problems. Called Earl Village. You know, I don't know if you remember Earl Village.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they built up all these new condominiums around there now. But at that time, it was blighted, you know, in
right.
a sense. But the people still like to go to church. They would come to church. They would come to Little Rock Church, and we would have programs on. I was on a scouting committee for the kids, you know, boys, scouts.
Mm-hmm.
And I got into scouting when I was a kid. Right there at Little Rock Church, you know, my scoutmaster. So when I went off in Dayton, Ohio, I got back into scouting as an adult. I got my wood badge, you know, and it was from that and my activity in scouting in Dayton that the county council, Montgomery County Council of Scouting, nominated me to be part of the Health and Safety Committee for their annual, what do you call that great big thing they have annually?
Jamboree.
And that was the first year they could start having two jamborees. They would have one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast. Before then, it was just, you know, move around or
mm-hmm.
part of the one jamboree. But I went out to the big, huge, they call it the High Adventure, out in New Mexico.
Lake Roberts?
No, Philmont.
Okay.
215 square miles of land.
Mm.
The Wade Phillips. Founders of Phillips 66 gave to scouts. Then he says, all the proceeds are coming from Phil Tower, which is I think something like a 40-some story building in Oklahoma, will be used to take care and defray the expenses of whatever you might need. Now that was what he did before he died,
right.
And it's going on.
Right.
And that was just his summer cottage at that time.
Right.
So anyway, those are some of the things, the experience I had, and I passed on my kids. I took them out there, so they had a ball.
Okay.
And that's something that is what in the neighborhood, what my father did for me, you know, and what the neighborhood would do for the kids, you know, right in that same block or in the general neighborhood, you know, was appreciated. They didn't have to do that. Whether it's a church or you did it right around the corner of one of the open lots, they cleared a lot off and you go in and have a little shindig or picnic or something, you know.
Right.
Picnic.
Okay. Well, I think that I think we have kind of what we need there, you know, your experiences in Brooklyn and all that. I just want to go and thank you for your time. Mm-hmm. And before we conclude this, is there anything you would like to, you know, one little final thing you would like to add, or?
Well, I don't know. I guess I've said enough. I enjoyed growing up in Brooklyn as a Boston, and I think if that same opportunity would come about for my kids in that type of milieu and climate with people and things, I would like for them to have that experience too. And, so that was, those are lessons that you learn when you grow up, you know, and how you appreciate them as you get older and mature.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.